We are back with the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast today, celebrating Pride Month.
Indeed, and here to help us dive in is former NBA player and LGBTQIA plus advocate, Jason Collins.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. Monica McNutt alongside Dallin Cuff here. Monica just did a little shimmy. I thought you were going to wear the same draft outfit. I thought you were just going to run it back for our podcast. Didn't seem like the same venue.
It's hanging up here in the office. Got to get it dry cleaned.
What are we doing here? Come on, girl. You look great in the hoodie, but I thought we were just going to represent again.
Listen, you know this. The hoodie is me at heart. That was just special occasions.
Special occasion, no doubt. She's got her ball and everything today. I don't know where you pulled that off of all of a sudden. All of a sudden, I see you look over there. You were doing ball handling drills before we started.
It's just down on the floor. It was calling my name. You know how it go.
I feel you. Innately, it was a part of my hand for like 18 years. Not anymore. Right. We've hung it up. We got a great conversation coming your way here today, folks. It is the last day of Pride Month, and Jason Collins is going to join us. LGBTQIA plus advocate, and he is obviously a former NBA player, was the first openly gay NBA player, came out in an article in Sports Illustrated back in May of 2013, was then part of the Nets team in 14, which ended up getting to the playoffs. We talked a little about that, but his impact, and it's almost a decade ago that he came out, and that's crazy to me.
I had not realized, like, where's the time going? Like, it's just, things have changed so much since then, but of course, and we'll get into it on the pod, but you know, we shouldn't be too comfortable as we've seen some recent developments in our country. So I'm excited to talk to Jason. I think just like the Black experience, just like the female experience, there's the LGBTQIA plus community. That experience is not a monolith. And I love that Jason is an athlete, right? And sheds the stereotype of the theater guy or the fashion guy that happens to be gay. But like, again, there's a range of people that are in this community and they deserve love and respect.
No doubt about it. And he has just an interesting space he occupies now as kind of one of the trailblazers, as we get into that and some of the phone calls he got right when he came out from some important people and some influential folks, but also still being like a confidant. He's like a consigliere to a lot of particularly young men trying to determine should they come out or not. We have seen not many come out other than Robbie Rogers in MLS and Carl Nassib in the NFL, but there are, as Jason outlines, if you play 15, 20 years, you played with a gay teammate at some point in time. It's just when that person's journey, are they ready to come out? And now Jason joins us. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. Obviously this is the last day of Pride Month. There's a lot going on in the world, and I want to touch on some bigger things that are complicated, but let's start in a more positive note. As you look back at the month that was, what does Pride Month mean to you now, and mean more broadly to the country, do you think?
Pride Month for me is all about celebrating who you are. I was taught as a young kid growing up in Los Angeles alongside my twin brother to be proud of everything that makes you who you are. In particular, my parents were probably talking about being Black, but then also being super tall. We were 5'3" in the third grade. We were taller than our third grade teacher. so it was just trying to instill that pride of sense of self that my parents were in us. And then as you get older and, you know, life gets a little more complicated and you realize, wait, I have different feelings than some of my other friends have. But it's just one more thing to celebrate that makes us unique and makes us special. And, you know, it really is a month to also look back on all the sacrifices that people have made so that we can get to this moment.
I love that, Jason. And I find there's a couple of things I just can't wait to get into as we get further into this conversation. But I find as important as it is to have our various months to celebrate the things that make us unique, it's also important not to be disillusioned, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like in the process of celebrating. And I'm sure you can speak to that on many fronts as a person who sits at the intersection of multiple identities.
I mean, like there's no greater example than a few days ago. So I'm in New York, ready to celebrate NYC Pride Weekend, about to do an event at Stonewall Inn. The monument had a groundbreaking ceremony for the visitor center. And literally 20 minutes before the event starts, the decision comes down from the Supreme Court, and you're reminded that there, you know, as we're there to celebrate, you know, that day that rights are being stripped away in our country. And it's a constant reminder, especially with regards to civil rights, for that it's a marathon, and it's a constant fight to keep moving, trying to move the country forward, because there are some people who want to take us backwards.
Yeah, I feel like we have to touch on that. I mean, obviously, in the decision, Clarence Thomas alluded to marriage, and meaning gay marriage, and even interracial marriage in some states, in terms of that's going back into that regard as well. Gay marriage was upheld in the Supreme Court in 2015, but with that kind of signaling in Roe v. Wade being overturned, what is like the concern level? How do you feel as you're about to have that event, and when you're connecting with your community, like how does that make you feel?
I mean, we have to understand that we're all, with regards to minority groups, that when there's an attack on one of us, there's an attack on all of us. And that it's basically like, we're next kind of thing. It's like, you know, so you really have to keep in mind. And that's why it's important to speak up and be so vocal and to encourage people to vote like this, you know, and also encourage those politicians who we do vote for to use the power, the political power that they have, to try to offset some of the stuff that's coming from the Supreme Court. It's really sad to see, but at the same time, I try to, you know, think back to what my family has gone through personally. On my mom's side, growing up in the segregated South under Jim Crow in Louisiana, knowing that what they have been able to achieve and what they have been able to overcome, and knowing that it's my turn to, you know, keep trying to push and overcome for the next generation of my family, because I have two young nieces who are age 13 and 11. And, you know, I want to leave the country in a better place than when I stepped into it. So we have a lot of work to do. Constant. Yeah. But I'll speak about some happier moments during this month. And it started with doing the commencement, my first ever commencement speech for Middlebury College. Yeah.
Okay.
I was supposed to be the commencement speaker in May 2020. And then obviously 2020 happened. So it was delayed. But so they invited all of those students to come back. And it was like a mini reunion, a 2-year reunion for them. And they got to march, and then they got to hear some great words of wisdom from retired NBA player, NBA Cares ambassador, Jason Collins. And it was a great experience. And then followed that up with participating in the first ever Pride Parade in the Hamptons. Some people don't know this, but I am part Native American, and my reservation is in my tribe, I'm Shinnecock Indian, and our tribe is in Southampton, New York. So in the middle of extreme wealth, there is a reservation, and I've been to the reservation several times, and I even brought my partner a few years ago. We did powwow there, so it was really cool to participate. And the Hamptons did their first ever Pride Parade in East Hampton, and I was there alongside the Mets Foundation. And then some other happy stuff. Let's see. Marching in New York City Pride Parade. I mean, come on. We had a huge float. And it was also really cool to see, you know, our straight allies there alongside us. And in particular, Reggie Bullock. He's been incredible, outspoken ally for the community. And it was great to see him and march and celebrate alongside him. We had, you know, WNBA, NBA, G League. I mean, you name it. We were all there representing.
Reggie has a particularly powerful story with his sister, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. He had a transgender sister who was murdered. Yeah. And since then, he's just been, a huge outspoken ally for the community.
Yeah, great stuff there. All right, Jason. So here's what I was excited to talk to you about today, because we've done a similar conversation on the WNBA side with Kurt Miller, who is the only openly gay head coach in the WNBA. And he's talked about a lot of the space with on the men's side. Like, I guess I take it for granted. Like, I've had teammates that were gay for as long as I can remember. And obviously the WNBA has embraced its queer community and wears that as a badge of honor. But on the men's side, it's not so much, right? So I'm just curious, like, as you have been a part of men's sports and watched men's sports and take it in, how do I phrase this question, Jason? Like, what's the temperature? Like, are we going to see more? I'm blanking on the young man's name from the Raiders.
Carl
Nassib.
Are we going to see more? Like, what's the deal on the men's side?
Well, that's a great question. Let's start with Carl Nassib. Last year, he made history in the NFL, had a great year with the Raiders. Unfortunately, because of salary cap reasons, they had to release him. And to this date, you know, he is still an unsigned free agent. And in my opinion, he should already have been signed. So have to wait and see what's going to happen there. But he had a great year last year with the Raiders. And you know, again, the Raiders made the playoffs. And it was similar to when I came out with the Nets and, you know, and signed back with them. And, you know, that whole thing of, ooh, it's going to be a distraction. Okay, how's the team doing? Oh, in its first 12 games, they're 10-2. And we're, you know, going to make the playoffs and end up, you know, beating the Toronto Raptors in Game 7 in Toronto. And then also you can look with other examples in male sports with Robbie Rogers in Major League Soccer winning the MLS Cup. So, yeah, I'm hoping that there are going to be other male athletes who do step forward. And as you said, in the WNBA and in particular women's sports, it really is like I remember – when Elena Deladon came out right before the Rio Olympics, and everyone was like, okay, cool, go win a gold medal. Like, <Yeah. laughs> that's what she did. Like, and that's sort of like the reaction that we're waiting for, you know, in male sports, where it's going to take more and more male athletes to step forward. In the meantime, the sports leagues are, you know, overall, you know, the NBA, I think, is also leading the way on this as far as setting the tone that, you know, with regards from a leadership perspective, that when a player does step forward, that they will have the complete support of, and also there's a few other, I mean, I think in Major League Baseball, I think every sport is ready for that next sport, you know, gay male athlete to step forward. But in the meantime, we will continue to cheer on our female athletes because women again are leading the way.
That seems like the standard.
As it has been in the course with regards to LGBTQ athletes. I mean, I couldn't have done what I did without Martina Navratilova and Billie Jean King. So it's women have been leading the way for years and decades. And I hope that my actions, and I have spoken to other athletes and have heard from them that my actions have helped them. I just had a conversation with a minor league baseball player a couple of days ago who's openly gay, and it was a great conversation. He's trying to, you know, set the groundwork in Major League Baseball as well for that next, you know, for that athlete, you know, to come out.
That's what I was actually going to ask you. It's been 9 years ago this past May where you had your essay in Sports Illustrated. The year later is when you're back with the Nets. I mean, it's almost been a decade. Are men coming to you as counsel a little bit? Because obviously it's a really personal and difficult decision. You just mentioned Carl Nassib. We'll never know. If he doesn't come out, is he on a roster right now? Like, we don't know those things. And I'm sure that has to be somewhere in people's heads. How do you counsel other people? Do they reach out and try to connect with you?
Yeah. Yes. The simple answer is yes.
What is that interaction like?
So for the most part, it's just about support. So they've come to me through, like, I don't want to say underground, but like through the network of people that we, you know, there's, you know, friends of friends kind of thing. And then, you know, I'm in contact with them and I talk to them about basically their sport, about how's life going? Because that's also something when you're in the closet, you are constantly, you know, wearing a mask. Okay, don't say this, like, don't let someone figure out today. But when you're having that conversation with me, it's like, okay, you're going to take the mask off and we're going to talk about everything from how your sport is going, how your life is going, your family. Did you see the latest RuPaul's Drag Race? Okay, maybe you're not into that yet. Okay, we'll get you there. We will get you there. Okay. But, so it's just more about the human being, the personal side, and then, you know, allowing them to relax. And then, you know, once you, you know, you become that friendship with them, then it's okay. How can I help your career as far as like professional? Because, you know, I always try to give advice with young athletes. You know, it's funny. It's like I'm the veteran. I've been, that's that role that I had towards the end of my career was like, okay, are you the first person there at the practice facility, or are you the last one to leave? Like, how are you, you know, developing your career, your reputation that way? And then also reminding, then we will eventually talk about, okay, when you're ready, you will know when you are ready. I just had a conversation with someone. That's exactly what I said to them through a text message. It was like, you will know when you are ready to step forward. Don't ever feel like someone's pressuring you to do, you know, one thing. You know, it's your life, your decision. But know that when you do step forward, the community will be there to support you. And also remind them that my jersey was a number one best-selling jersey alongside LeBron James and Steph Curry when I came out, you know, when I was back in the league. And like, so the purchasing power is there. Like, I'm still a Nike athlete to this day. Go Nike. So they're a great partner of the NBA. So I just remind them that it will be okay. But at the same time, we're just going to talk about the person.
On that note, Jason, how would you encourage coaches, parents? Because I think, and I have heard this, too young to know, you know, that whole thing, particularly in sports, right? Like, how would you encourage parents and coaches of athletes that may be looking to celebrate all that they are?
Yeah. So I'll break it up. So parents, know that, especially in this day and age, when just about every kid has access to this. Well, here's my Muhammad Ali.
Love that.
I'm sorry, listen, let him know.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So, but okay. So just about every kid has access to some sort of device that will open them up to the world. So where would you want your kid learning? Through the internet and through their friends, or through you, the parent? So why don't you have those conversations? And you know your child, and but be aware that, you know, they might be, you know, so you'll know the age. I have a 13-year-old niece, 11-year-old niece, and 9-year-old nephew. And there's ways that you introduce, okay, and you can use my example of, hey, do you see that basketball player? Well, he has a boyfriend, or he has a husband. Or do you see that basketball player like Diana Taurasi? Well, her wife is at the game. I mean, like, so there's ways that you can sort of just have like a casual conversation about your favorite athletes, maybe, especially great examples in the WNBA. And you could say, oh, Breonna Stewart just had a baby with her wife. Great conversation to talk about, you know, kind of thing. So there's ways that you can sort of introduce it and make it as normal and casual as it can be. With regards to coaches, at all the great coaches and teams that I've been on, at the beginning of the year, we talk about what the values of our team are. And this has, yes, it touches upon, but it has nothing necessarily to do with LGBT, but it's more about, we are hardworking. We are, if you're men's basketball team, we are a fraternity. We are integrity, hustle, hard work. So you create whatever those values are. And usually they're all very positive values, so that if something happens with a team member using inappropriate language, you could pull them aside and say, you're going against our team values. Mm-hmm. Our values of hard work, inclusion, fraternity, brotherhood. Okay. So there's ways that you can sort of, and I am big into trying to pull someone aside in a team dynamic, because if you try to call someone out in front of everybody, at least the first time, then they might get defensive. But if there's repeated bad behavior, then maybe you might have to do, but that's up to the coach. Every coaching style is different. But if for my advice for coaches is come up with those core values that you have. And then when someone does say or do something that is either homophobic or sexist or racist or whatever it is, you speak to them on, you're going against the core values of our team. We need to bring you back into, back into line with what and the direction that we're going as a team, kind of thing. So there are tools that you can have in that.
It's such an interesting point, because I think back to my, basketball experience in high school and in college, like as society's evolved, there was acceptable language across everything then that is completely unacceptable now. And when you look back and think about some of the language used, whether it was race, gender, all these different things, was acceptable or was by society. Have you seen a change where the young people are kind of reflecting those values we want to have? Is it at all, I guess, is it battled by an older generation? Like, are younger people in a different place than some of the older people are in our generation? Because we're talking, if some coaches may be 40, 50, 60 years old, that's a very different perspective than a 10, 15, 20-year-old individual boy or girl, or anybody. What are your thoughts in terms of like that kind of dynamic?
So there still is that language in the culture of sport. And mind you, the coaches now are, my age or a little bit older, so there still is, and they're still the teachers. So we have to make sure that we're educating the teachers, giving the teachers the right tools to help them. Because sometimes they may not mean to be homophobic or sexist, but they're using language that they were taught. So they're sort of just recycling this language, and they're not necessarily understanding the impact of those words. When I was in the closet, I would hear my teammates use that language, and I would be like, ooh, I don't know if I should come out to that person. Well, it turns out when I did come out, that person was one of my biggest supporters. And I want to say to them, hey, do you realize the language that you were using? Yeah. And there's a total disconnect sometimes with some of the language that is used in sport. But that's some part of my job now, is to go around and try to educate people, work with different organizations like Athlete Ally or GLSEN. Is trying to create, safe spaces and try to increase that awareness with the impact of the understanding of the impact of the words that are being used in the locker room or on the court or on the field, kind of thing. I think that younger kids, though, they get it a lot quicker. They do, because our society does have more and more people who are stepping forward. But at the same time, you can see in our country that there are laws being created right now in different legislation, statewide legislations, that are attacking LGBTQ youth. So, we have to talk about these with the kids and say, okay, where do you feel? Okay, then have a discussion with them. And, I think it's crazy. My 11-year-old niece is so mature. I can have this conversation with her. And so, and trust kids, to be able to handle, this information. Because it'll make them a better human being in the end, and a better teammate.
Yeah, the example that you gave, or the suggestion that you gave for coaches, is just it's just so fundamental. But I think it's also the beauty of sport, right? The beauty of our experience as athletes is, even if you are from rural town, wherever, but if you have the opportunity to play sports, you're innately going to meet people that are different. And that can be sort of your first interaction. And then it's a much more tangible and understanding of a community. You know what I mean? I just think that face-to-face representation and engagement is so powerful in terms of what sport allows us to do.
Yeah. And unfortunately, though, there are those LGBTQ athletes that are, still, in the closet and hiding. And I tell this to players, okay, if you've played AAU basketball, junior high school basketball, college or something intermediate. And then if you play in the NBA for 10 years, somewhere along that 15 to 20 year career, you will have had a gay teammate or a member of the LGBTQ community teammate. You just might not have realized it. Mm-hmm. So, and we all know what it's like to walk into a room and maybe feel like we don't look like everybody else in the room. And in that moment, how did you want it? You wanted to feel welcome. You wanted to feel at ease. You wanted someone to be like, hey, come over here, hang out with us, kind of thing. You wanted to be like, going back to the cafeteria, where you just want to be accepted for who you are, kind of thing. So, and that's the beauty of the athletes, you're creating that environment. Okay, what kind of environment do you want in that locker room? You want an environment, in my opinion, of inclusion. Because that way, everybody is buying into the team. It's not just the performance on the court or on the field. Mm-hmm. but it's the off the field stuff that sort of builds that chemistry. And you can see it in good teams that they have that off the court, off the field chemistry that they're able to bring on the court and on the field, and just adds that extra layer dynamic to the overall team strength and their ability to you know, win.
How important do you think it is to have, because we just said the W in women's sports in general, and WSL, the WNBA has just outstanding women to be great examples, as you said, people to help create conversations for young people and kind of have these discussions. On the men's side, it's not as much. How important is it? You know, Pete Buttigieg was the first, you know, person, major political party, first gay person to get delegates. Like, there is incremental progress in other places. Is it critical that there are more Jason Collins, that there are more guys in the NBA, and there are more Carl Nassibs in the NFL? Is that necessary to keep moving it forward, or is that critical? I guess
it is extremely difficult to achieve something without having role models or seeing someone who looks like you, who's already gone down that path. Yes, it is possible, because I did reach a moment where I said, I'm waiting for someone else to raise their hand, but they're not raising it. So I'll go ahead and raise my hand. I know the answer, teacher. So, but it's difficult, because you're asking, you could be asking a lot of someone to try to, you know, go, you know, be that trailblazer. But so yes, it is important that we see those other, Billie Jean King calls them possibility models and role models of, like, someone that, you know, looks like me or has the same background, or someone that I can, you know, really relate to and say, if they did it, I can do it. So that is important.
As much as we celebrate firsts, Jason, you're right. We had Chuck Cooper on the pod, Dallin, remember? And he was talking about, Chuck Cooper, the third, right. And he was talking about his dad's experience and how he passed away at a young age because of so much of the stress and the burden of sort of being the first, and the things that we don't talk about that comes along with it, even though it is certainly something worthy of celebration. It takes a toll.
Yeah. But also, you know, it's funny, because I there's a scene in a movie called Moneyball, a baseball movie. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene that Brad Pitt has, and he says, the first person through the wall usually gets bloodied. And I mentally was preparing myself, like, okay, like, I'm going to take a few hits. But I received so much support. And yes, there was that negative stuff, especially online, you know, the trolls. But I received so much support and love and just acceptance from my NBA family, WN family, from my family, my personal, like, I really didn't go through this wall by myself. I went through the wall with so many people having my back and supporting me along the way. And one of the cool moments, you know, on the day that, you know, that the story broke on Sports Illustrated, was getting back-to-back calls from Oprah Winfrey and President Barack Obama. So I was like, okay, you're cool with Oprah and with Barack? Yeah, okay. I'm doing something right. And I will speak to, like, something that President Obama said that was, you know, congratulations. He said, what you've done today will have a positive impact on someone that you might not ever meet in your lifetime. And he said that that's the goal of every single American, should have a positive impact on someone else that you might not ever meet in your lifetime. But I thought that was a really cool, because I didn't really think about it like the lens, like to look out from the bigger, you know. But it's and that's now my mission. I really do go around with that mission of trying to have a positive impact on someone else's life that I might not ever meet.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, that, and again, when you came out too, society was in a different place. It was almost 10 years ago. Gay marriage was not legal. Have things progressed enough that young men, we got to keep focusing on them, because we've already talked about the kind of difference in the people being out, but do they recognize too, that the positive, that there's going to be negative, but there's going to be some positive there, and there's going to be kind of that greater good you're contributing to?
Yes, there definitely is that. But you also have to keep in mind, when we just saw that nothing is, especially when it comes to social liberties, that nothing is set in stone. Mm-hmm. There was, in my mind, it was settled law with regards to a women's right to choose over 50 years, like, you know, like, and so anything, we just had not even 10 years of gay marriage. So this is not, so the fight, it truly is a marathon. And that's why it's so important to have these conversations. Because the only way that things are going to change and to truly affect someone's heart and mind is to talk about the things. So whether it's, you know, having Pride Night games or, you know, having these conversations where we'll talk about LGBTQ issues, that's the only way that things are going to, you know, change and stay on the right path. Because if you sort of put it back to the back burner, know that there's people on the other side don't have it on the back burner. Like, they are thinking, okay, how can I repeal? How can I take it back? And it's just sad. That is so sad to me. Like, why do you want to move us back? we keep going forward. As athletes, I think we're all in this way of like, we're going forward.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
That's interesting. This weekend, I mean, I talked to a lot of different folks, and I feel like there was like a renewed sense of energy behind that, like, all right, maybe we got complacent for a second here. Like, this is a problem. As you said, there's a lot of people that want to retard progress. They want to pull things back. Do you think this may be kind of a seminal moment for others to stand up and say, to kind of renew the fight, if you will?
I hope so. So I have been a little bit political. I have spoke on the stage of the DNC in 2016, I believe that was. But my main thing is just encouraging people to vote. Like, in my family, my grandmother, who grew up in segregated Jim Crow, it was not easy for her to vote. That's what part of the reason why they moved the family from Louisiana to California. But even with that being said, they were the first Black family to move into an all-white neighborhood. Like, just all the struggles that they have gone through, vote, please go. So I go around the country and I try to encourage people to vote. I remember having a conversation in Florida with a college student, and this was in 2016, and the student was so apathetic. And I was trying to explain to them, okay, if you don't vote, you're not using your voice. And then I said, okay, do you care about, you know, I listed a few issues, and they said, yeah, I care about those issues. And then I said, okay, well, then do you realize who's setting the policy for those issues is the people who get elected into office? And there was a total disconnect there. But I think now people are seeing it, not only with regards to policy, but also who is, you know, nominating the judges to get then confirmed. Mm-hmm. And so you see how it's all connected, but it all goes back to your vote. So that is also something that we can talk about, that is make sure that, and especially to those young kids out there, I would be like, if I'm 16, 17 years old, just waiting for my 18th, you know, so that I can have the right to vote and join this great, you know, democracy that we have, and speak up for those issues that are important to you, whether it is a woman's right to choose, whether it's, you know, gun violence in you know, we see, you know, all the heartbreak that's going on in our classroom. Like, there are these issues that are out there that have to speak to you in some way. Please go vote and put people in positions of power. And if you don't see a person who maybe represents you, why don't you go be that person? Because it is, hey, you know, you can go be that politician. You can go be that county sheriff, that district attorney, that there's so many ways, you know, I'm looking at sports, you know, team, but the team of society, there's so many ways to help. And it could be on the national level, it can be on the local level, regional, to make sure that, you know, we're pushing these issues and doing things. So again, that we are moving forward.
So well said, Jason. Look, it's a whole lot going on. And to go be a politician right now is a tall task. But I feel where you're coming from.
Yeah. Or if you see a need and it's not,
I mean, you're right.
Go serve. But, you know, in the meantime, if you do see someone who speaks to you like a Pete Buttigieg, I absolutely am just, I wish I could sit and listen to him talk. He is so smart and just, and so, and talk about someone who's, you know, served. He went to Afghanistan. Like, yeah, he felt, yeah, you know, felt the calling to go serve in the military. So, like, but there are those people that do exist. I was very fortunate. One of my former college roommates, Joe Kennedy, He was a congressman for the state of Massachusetts. I can speak to you on how good of a human being he is and why he should be, you know, someone that we should support. But there are, but those people do exist, and it's important to support them and vote for them.
Jason, we could talk to you probably for another hour and a half, but that
Yeah, we've gone over so many different issues, but they're all connected. They are.
That's exactly it. They are all connected, and I hope folks understand that and get that. Jason, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.